I didn't realize information could make a man untouchable until I watched him stop doing his job and start collecting leverage instead. It happened quietly, the way most dangerous shifts do. A misplaced email, a calendar invite sent to the wrong distribution list, a lunch conversation that lingered too long near the copy machine. He didn't create chaos. He harvested it. While the rest of us were chasing performance metrics and approval, he was building a map of who lied to whom, who slept with whom, who signed off on what they pretended not to see. At first, he framed it as competence. He was in the loop. He knew how things worked. People laughed nervously and leaned closer. Then they stopped laughing. I remember the exact moment I understood the rules had changed. A senior manager froze mid-sentence because he was in the room. Another rewrote a report after he raised an eyebrow. It wasn't fear of exposure. It was dependence. He didn't need to be good. He needed to know. And once I saw it, I couldn't unsee how quickly a workplace will trade integrity for silence when secrets start to feel like explosives. I was working at a mid-sized logistics technology firm in Copenhagen, the kind of place that branded itself as flat and progressive while quietly running on hierarchy and favors. We handled routing software for regional shipping companies, nothing glamorous, but enough money moved through us that mistakes mattered. I was a senior operations analyst, not flashy, but trusted. I had been there long enough to know which deadlines were flexible and which ones would quietly end a career. I understood how power moved without being announced. He came in as a compliance coordinator, a role that sounded boring enough to attract no attention. His job was to track internal audits, make sure procedures were followed, document deviations. He wasn't charismatic. He wasn't impressive. He was observant. He listened more than he spoke, and when he did speak, it was usually to clarify something that made people uncomfortable. He asked questions that were technically reasonable and socially dangerous, the kind that make a room go quiet. At first, I thought he was just meticulous. He noticed discrepancies in reports. He flagged conflicts between written policy and actual behavior. He had a talent for remembering dates, names, and exact phrasing. When he corrected someone, he did it gently, almost apologetically. People thanked him. Managers started copying him on emails just in case. It felt harmless. The warning signs were subtle. He never missed a meeting, even ones he wasn't invited to. He would show up with a notebook and say he'd been forwarded the calendar invite by mistake, then stay anyway. He had a habit of summarizing conversations back to people later, verbatim enough to feel invasive. He knew about restructuring discussions before they were announced. He knew which managers were under investigation internally before HR admitted anything was happening. He knew who was sleeping with whom, even when they were careful. I started noticing how often people checked his reaction before speaking freely, how a joke would die if he didn't smile, how executives stopped challenging him in meetings, not because he was right, but because correcting him felt risky. Information flowed toward him naturally, like water finding a drain. People volunteered details to stay on his good side. They framed it as transparency. I recognized it as preemptive defense. The first time I felt it personally was when he casually referenced a draft proposal I had only shared with my director. He didn't say anything threatening. He just mentioned a line from it, asked if I was still considering that approach. My stomach tightened. I asked how he'd seen it. He said it had been forwarded during a compliance review. It hadn't. I checked. No one admitted sending it. No one wanted to say his name out loud. The company culture rewarded certainty and punished disruption. We like to think of ourselves as ethical, but we were conflict avoidant to the core. He exploited that. He never accused, he implied, he never threatened, he reminded, and slowly the room tilted around him. The shift from asset to liability happened over months, not days. He stopped completing routine tasks on time. Audit reports came back late, thin, poorly analyzed. When questioned, he would reference ongoing sensitivities and hint that rushing could expose the company to risk. Managers nodded. No one wanted to push. He began inserting himself into decisions outside his role. Procurement, hiring, even performance reviews. He would flag potential compliance concerns that mysteriously disappeared if he got what he wanted. I watched a department head reverse a disciplinary action after a private meeting with him. No explanation, just a quiet update that the issue had been resolved. I watched a junior manager get promoted despite mediocre performance because he was aligned with governance priorities. I watched people who challenged him get sidelined, reassigned, labeled as difficult. He didn't need authority. He had access. I tried to document patterns, not to expose him, but to protect myself. Dates, instances, language shifts. I wasn't planning a takedown. I just wanted to understand the shape of the problem. The more I wrote down, the clearer it became that leadership knew, or at least suspected, and they were choosing him because he was useful. He held the kind of knowledge that kept scandals theoretical instead of public. The moment I crossed from observer to participant was when he asked me for a favor. He wanted early access to operational data tied to a pending merger. Not officially approved yet, he framed it as preparation, risk mitigation. He reminded me that delays could cause regulatory scrutiny. He also mentioned casually that my director had approved a workaround on a previous project that technically violated policy. He said it like a shared secret, like trust. I said no, politely, carefully. I cited process. He smiled and said he understood. 2 weeks later, my performance review included language I'd never seen before. Concerns about collaboration, questions about adaptability. My director avoided eye contact when delivering it. I didn't accuse anyone. I didn't need to. The message was clear. I considered escalating to HR. Then I remembered who controlled the narrative. He had friends there, or at least leverage. I considered going to the board. Then I remembered how much they feared exposure. This wasn't a whistleblower story waiting to happen. This was a system that had already decided the cost of silence was lower than the cost of truth. People started treating him like weather, something you plan around but don't challenge. He was invited to strategy sessions. He was asked to sense check decisions. He became the unofficial archive of everyone's compromises, and the higher he climbed, the less accountable he became. He didn't deliver results. He delivered restraint. I felt myself shrinking, choosing words carefully, avoiding written records. I hated it. I hated how quickly I adapted. I hated how easy it was to justify small compromises when the alternative felt like professional suicide. That's how complicity works. Not with applause, with fatigue. The collapse didn't come from bravery. It came from volume. Too many secrets, too many hands, too much noise. An external audit uncovered irregularities unrelated to him at first. But once investigators started asking broad questions, patterns surfaced. Email chains, access logs, unusual influence trails. He couldn't control what he didn't curate. When leadership realized he was now a liability instead of a shield, the tone changed. Suddenly, his presence made people nervous again. Meetings excluded him. Decisions happened without his input. He noticed. He pushed back. He hinted. But the leverage had expired. The secrets were no longer contained. They were already bleeding. They didn't fire him publicly. That would have invited questions. They offered a quiet exit, severance, non-disclosure, mutual agreement. He left without drama, without apology. His LinkedIn update framed it as a strategic transition. People liked the post. The company issued a statement about strengthening governance. A few policies changed. A few faces disappeared. Most stayed. I stayed longer than I thought I would, then eventually left. Not because I was punished, but because I couldn't unlearn what I'd seen. The residue wasn't fear. It was clarity. I understood how power really works when information becomes currency and ethics become optional. I understood that systems don't protect people. They protect stability. And sometimes stability means choosing the person who can do the most damage and calling it risk management. I still think about how close I came to becoming useful to him, how tempting it was to trade integrity for insulation, how easily I might have convinced myself it was just pragmatism. That's the part that stays with me. Not him, not the fallout. The quiet realization that knowing too much doesn't make you powerful, knowing who is afraid of what does. And once you see that, every workplace looks different.